compulsory celibacy came in around the 12th century, but celibacy has been in the Latin rite, the church that we belong to, the Roman rite of the church, the Latin rite of the church, going back to the 3rd century, going back to Christ himself. Christ was a celibate man. St. Paul would have held celibacy in high regard. And yet that is a man-made law by the institutional church that celibacy is there since the 12th century. In regards to women priests, very much John Paul II back in the 90s said that this is divine law and that we haven't got a right to change, that Jesus chose 12 men and that isn't going to change, and it can change in the Latin Rite in the church. And we're seeing some of the people coming over from the Anglican Rite to this new ordinate in England and in America and in Australia. And part of the reason behind that is because they're going down avenues that people aren't feeling comfortable with. So do I see a change in the Roman Rite? I don't think we're going to see, in the near future anyway, married clergy or women priests. I don't see that happening from the institution. Doesn't seem to be the way that they see going forward. And also, if we look at some of the other denominations or ecclesial movements or the other churches, they don't have an increase in vocation because they're married or because there's women priests. Their vocations are no higher than their own. So is it the answer to the vocation crisis? I don't believe it is the answer to our vocational crisis. And also, someone would say, then, are women being excluded? Well, men are being excluded because when men come to Maynooth or to any seminary, they discern. But it's the church that says, as on my ordination, after inquiry among the people of God and after your studies, we've deemed this man worthy to be ordained.
I suppose the difference, though, is that, you know, a woman is deemed unworthy before she even starts, which is a little difficult, I think, to explain in today's culture.
Yeah. In our culture, it seems like an injustice, or it seems to be a discrimination, and very much that's what our culture would see it in. If you look at any of the other religions, Muslims, Jews, Hindus, all them, the religious leaders are men, and men are supposed to be in the household, the leader of the faith community, and to lead their children. And it's not that the women should be kept as second-class citizens. The church doesn't see a woman as a second-class citizen. And if you look at any of our churches, who was involved in parish councils, who was involved, it's very much at the ground that the women are really doing fantastic work and keeping the faith alive in the house and in schools and all over the country. We're seeing it time and time again. And in the Legion of Mary or in St. Vincent de Paul, all these organisations. But again, I do see, and I can see it, that where the decisions are made, it seems to be just all males are making the decisions. But again, we can see it in parish councils, at the parish level, at the ground level. But again, we have to go with, like people say, that Christ was radical in his time. He was absolutely radical. And if he wanted to have some of the apostles for women, there was no reason why he didn't do that. So we believe today, to this day, that the bishops are the apostles of today, are the direct descendants, and the priests work in his name. And I suppose then when we're standing at the altar as males, we're saying that we are in persona Christi. That's what we understand from Vatican II. We are in the person of Christ. The priest stands in the person of Christ. So if you're up there and I know this probably will annoy women out there by this, but that's what the church believes. This is what the church believes. Just stand up there as a man in the actions of Jesus. You are doing Jesus' work there. You are in the person of Christ when you change the bread and wine into the body and blood. But it is hard to take, I think, and I do understand that women would have a serious issue with that, yeah.
It is a difficult thing for people to comprehend, and even, you know, so even listening to you now, I kind of think myself that's difficult enough for me to take on board or to kind of accept fully.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you say that Jesus was very radical, is it ironic then, in a sense, that the church is conservative?
A lot of people would say the church is, but I suppose, and hold on to his traditions. I think we've seen that in other denominations where they haven't held on to their traditions, and now they seem to be, there's great fractions in there and great multitude of divisions again in them. The Roman Catholic Rite sees that it has a tradition, and the bishops, the cardinal, and the pope see that it is their duty to make sure and hold on to the tradition and that has been handed on to them, and handed on, right going back, like every bishop can link his ordination going way back to the time of the apostles. So, and there is stuff like in regards to doctrine of the church. So if something is a man-made law, it can change, but if it's a divine law, the church has no right to change it. And really, I suppose, we can get caught up in labelling people and putting them, and I remember talking to a bishop here during the week, and he was getting sort of irate about this, that people are going on about there's conservatives, there's liberals, there's traditionalists, and there's progressives. We're all followers of Christ. And I think we have to remember that it's Christ's message, and it's the Holy Spirit working in the church. And we have to believe, and our faith brings that about in us, that it's truly the Holy Spirit working. And when we listen to the Holy Spirit, and that's why prayer is important, why the sacraments are important. We are a sacramental church after all. That's the primary source. The Eucharist, we find out again from Vatican II, is the source and summit of our faith, comes through the Eucharist, and when we celebrate that, and that's why we come as a community together. It's not that a priest goes up and celebrates a private mass. Well, that takes away from the whole idea of community. It's coming together, praying, but it's from there. That's why we call it the dismissal at the end of Mass. Go forth, the Mass has ended, or go and share the good news. Go out to the whole world and proclaim the good news, is what Christ said to us to do, and that is our duty, that's our part of evangelization, and that's not just priests. And the same for religious, it's not just for the religious to do that, that's the call of every baptized person.